All right, Alexander, let's do an update as to what's going on in Ukraine with Russia and the conflict there. What is the latest? The stuff that I'm getting is I'm getting the US mainstream media is saying that the Pentagon is helping Ukraine target generals. They're helping Ukraine target the Moskva. There's some story about some plane with 200 Russian soldiers that crashed because the Ukrainian military took it out, but no one can find any debris or anything. And from what I understand, 15 Russian generals have been taken out by Ukraine. Meanwhile, the Pentagon's denying all of this. I mean, it just seems like it's just such a.
I mean,
Anyway, what is go what's the reality of what is going on
I'm glad you
in
put it like
Ukraine?
that, Alex, because that's exactly what we need to look at. And can I just stress reality? So, you know, if you want to know what the reality is, follow us, follow the people that we refer to, the people we interview, the people we're going to interview. I mean, we've had programs with Scott Ritter, with Andrei Martyanov. We're probably before long going to have one with Douglas McGregor, but that's, you know, got to be arranged. It's complicated. Larry Johnson, Jacob Drysen, people like that, all people who are probably going to join us at some point on the Durand as well. But can I just say, talking about the military situation overall, what is the overall situation? It is the same that we have been discussing many, many times. We got lots of stories about the US, about the US intelligence supposedly helping Ukraine to target Russian generals. No proof of that. It's been denied by the US. There's another report on NBC that the US helped Ukraine target the Moskva. I don't believe that either. I don't think that they actually assisted Ukraine to target the Moskva. The big question, which we'll come to in a moment, is why these reports are circulating, given that the Pentagon itself is denying them. And I'm afraid there is an ominous explanation and a worrying one. But the reality, the actual military reality, is that the military situation in Donbass is becoming, with every day, harder for Ukraine. Now, this is what I'm hearing. The Russian losses have now slowed to a trickle. That the Russians are now launching massive artillery strikes on Ukraine positions, that Ukraine is taking heavy casualties. Now, the Russians claim they run to hundreds of people, hundreds of troops a day. Obviously, I can't confirm that, but that they are suffering heavy casualties seems to be indisputable. And if you want the final proof of that, you can see these pictures that, you know, you see, we get photos and films of people, dead bodies in Ukraine, in eastern Ukraine, overwhelmingly Ukrainians. But that's selective. What we hear now is that Zelensky and the Ukrainian government have now issued a formal decree which allows them to redeploy the territorial defense. These are home guard troops, men in their 40s, up and upwards, there's now by law they can be sent to the battlefront. That suggests heavy losses in men, which are becoming increasingly difficult to plug, and heavy material losses. And on top of what's going on in Donbass, what we now see is increasing effects from Russia's aerial campaign, which has been intensifying. So train systems, the railway system, is increasingly struggling to cope with the attacks on the power stations, the electric, you know, recharging points, the railway stations. It's not yet completely broken down, but it is taking an enormous hammering. And we also see massive shortages across Ukraine in fuel. People now have to queue up for, you know, hours at petrol stations to refill with fuel and diesel. And remember, with the railway system out of action, with no civil aircraft going in and out of Ukraine at the moment to any great extent, then, you know, you can see that this is becoming a major transportation crisis. So that's what's happening. Ukraine is being ground down militarily in Donbass, economically and societally, right across the entire country. GDP is said to be down by 30%. Some people put it much higher. I think it's higher. And, you know, we could also see, and there's more and more reports of more and more people leaving. The number of people who've left the country is said to be somewhere around 5 million. This is, you know, more, significantly more than a tenth of the population.
All right. So then why is there all this talk about Ukraine not surrendering? Not sitting down at the negotiating table? Why are we hearing from Boris Johnson and from Olaf Scholz that that Ukraine will dictate the terms of the ceasefire, that Ukraine will dictate the terms as to how and when Russia is removed from Europe's sanction list, and the talk that that Ukraine is waiting for Russia's capitulation?
Yes.
That's all we're hearing from the collectivist.
As well as
the talk that Ukraine is about to launch a massive counteroffensive come end of June.
The end of June, beginning of July, all of this on these Western weapon systems that are supposed to be pouring into Ukraine. Only, in fact, we're getting reports that many of these systems aren't either not arriving at the battlefront or proving much less effective than people said. There's a very simple and a very straightforward explanation. The reason Western powers are not prepared to allow Ukraine to negotiate, remember, Ukraine seemed for a brief time in March to be ready to negotiate, is because the neocons in Washington, in Brussels, in London, have tried trying to use Ukraine in order to bleed Russia. They want to prolong the war in Ukraine for as long as possible in order, as they believe, to damage Russia and to wait and hope that these sanctions measures that they're trying to impose on Russia will eventually have the effect that they're planning to. So the idea is keep the war going, refuse to negotiate. Boris Johnson, it now turns out, actually went to Kiev in order to impress upon Zelensky the importance of Zelensky not negotiating. And it seems Blinken and Austin did the same when they went to Kiev a short time ago. So not Ukraine told, don't negotiate, keep the war going. We're going to send you all these weapons. We're going to turn it all around for you. You're going to be able to go on this great offensive at the end of June, early July. Remember, Zelensky and his people, the people around him, are not military people, and they're ideologically very fervid, some of them. So they want to hear this talk. And the real reason is because Ukraine has been used as a pawn in a game against Russia and ultimately China as well. So that's what it's all about. It's all now about trying to wear Russia down, not about dictating peace, Ukraine dictating peace. It's not about Ukraine really at all anymore. It's about Russia. It always has been.
Is Russia aware of this?
Of course they are. They're very well aware of this. And I suspect that we are going to start to see increasing escalatory measures in response. First of all, it must be said that the Russians are proving a lot more resilient and a much tougher nut to crack economically than the West had ever anticipated. I mean, I think they all thought, you know, that the Russians would tumble. They're not tumbling. But, you know, there's still the hope that if you keep the pressure on, if you cut off Russian oil, that's the latest move from Brussels, though it's now running into resistance from Central and East European states, but, you know, probably that will be steamrolled over. But, you know, there's the hope that sooner or later Russia will crack, that the Russian people will then turn on their government, and that, you know, all the all the things that we've been talking about and looking forward to, the break, the humiliation of Russia, the breaking of Russia, the fall of Putin, all of that will finally be achieved sometime around the autumn and winter. And the hope is that this will happen. And if I can come back to those reports about the US helping Ukraine to kill Russian generals, helping in the destruction of the Moskva, things which the Pentagon itself is denying, I have no doubt that that's partly intended to keep Western opinion also energized, to keep it mobilized in order to keep the war going for as long as possible. Now, this is beginning to be understood not just in Russia, but around the world as well. We've had people like Lula da Silva in Brazil joining with Bolsonaro, by the way. They're both becoming increasingly critical of Western policy towards the war. So is India, of course, Indonesia too, other countries. They're starting increasingly to complain that this war of attrition that the West is trying to wage against Russia is starting to impact catastrophically upon them.
Yeah, even the Pope weighed in.
Even the Pope. Even the Pope. Even the Pope. Yeah, absolutely.
But I'm sure that has to do with the sanctioning of Kirill as well, which is quite an astonishing move.
Absolutely. It hasn't yet happened, and Hungary has now said it opposes it. And I think on this one, the Hungarians will probably stick to their positions. But, I mean, it really is an astonishing move. And it tells you, again, so much about the visceral hatred of Russia and everything Russian, which is ultimately what is driving this thing.
Any news on Poland or Moldova, this second or third front? And we also have news that Ukraine was trying to pressure Georgia to open up a front as well. And yeah. Georgia denied Ukraine's overtures. But they're trying to open up multiple fronts.
Absolutely. Well, which is another sign, by the way, that despite all the brave claims to the contrary, things in eastern Ukraine are not going at all well. But Georgia has emphatically said no. And I get the sense that relations between Georgia and Ukraine are now practically at breaking point, with the Georgians very, very upset and very angry at the way in which the Ukrainians are trying to draw them into the war. I'm starting to get the same sense about Moldova as well. Now, you know, we have various people who comment, who are from Romania. And you know, Moldova and Romania are very closely interconnected with each other. Various people who've been commenting about the mood in Romania and Moldova in various programs we've done on the Duran, including on locals, by the way. And they've all said, you know, that there's no real enthusiasm at all in either of these countries to become drawn into this war. And I'm getting the sense that this is clearly right. And again, the attempts by Ukraine to meddle and to interfere and to try and draw these countries into the war is actually annoying opinion in Moldova and Romania. It can't be discounted at all. I mean, it still could happen, but at the moment, the momentum towards it seems to have slowed because neither Bucharest nor Chisinau seem to be keen, the capitals of Romania and Moldova, respectively. Of course, the wild card always is Poland. The Polish government is extremely anti-Russian, very fervid in its policies. It's conducting these exercises in eastern Poland. What I would say is this: the number of troops that are being deployed to these exercises doesn't seem to me to be anywhere near big enough to intervene directly in the conflict in West and to occupy Western Ukraine. And I don't think there's enough troops. And of course, Poland, in a strange way, has weakened its military by shipping so many of its weapons already to Ukraine. So unless they're resupplied with weapons by the US between now and the middle of May, when people think that they might make this move, it doesn't seem to make a great deal of military sense from their point of view to do it. But then, of course, the government in Poland often doesn't act very sensibly. And one can't be certain that, you know, given the feelings there, that this won't happen, that they might not make a move of that nature. So we'll just have to wait and see.
All right. Belarusian President Lukashenko came out with a statement yesterday, and he said that this military operation is taking too long. He didn't anticipate it to take so long. What do you make of those statements?
Well, he said many things. He also said that an incident which happened in a northern town, northern suburb of Kiev, I'm not going to say which one, was fabricated by the British. He said that Ukraine has lost all interest in negotiations. He said many things, actually. People have just focused on that one particular thing. But, of course, Lukashenko is simply reflecting a feeling, widespread feeling, of an awful lot of people in Russia. There's been a major push in Russia from a large part of the population for a much greater acceleration of the tempo. There was talk also in Russia of acting, of carrying out some kind of mobilization. The British media picked up on it. So did the British Defence Secretary, Ben Wallace. He said that Putin would use the May 9th victory celebrations to order a general mobilization across Russia. The Russians have said flatly that they're not going to do anything of the kind. And I think that they will press on. It looks as if they're going to continue doing things according to their own timetable, whatever that is. And I'm sure that over the next few days, Putin will be explaining all of that to Lukashenko. Lukashenko's bridges are burnt. I don't think he has any real option other than to wait for what the Russians are going to do. And I think he knows it.
All right. To wrap up the video, Putin has cancer. That's what we're hearing from the collective West. Gerasimov, the general, was injured in a strike on a Russian command center, but I saw him sitting next to Shoigu just the other day. What do you make of all of these stories, these rumors, just swirling around the collective West?
I mean, they are classic disinformation operations. I mean, they are. I'm absolutely sure about. They're not just rumors. They are rumors which have been planted by various intelligence agencies, Ukrainian, Western, who knows, to try to undermine confidence in Russia and on the part of towards the Russian leadership. There's no evidence that Putin has cancer, none at all. All the indications are that he seems fairly vigorous. If you remember, Shoigu was supposed to be in disfavor, and there was a long period when he hadn't appeared, and people were saying he'd been sacked or was on the verge of resigning or had been put in some kind of doghouse. I was reading this morning in the London Times about arguments and quarrels amongst Russian generals. No real information about that. There's been claims that large numbers of FSB officials have been sacked. And some of them supposedly are under house arrest. Again, no corroborative evidence of this. The captain of the Moskva had apparently gone down with his ship, only he turned up in Sevastopol at a ceremony there. So, you know, we must take all of these claims with a great deal of, caution. Now, there have been lots of reports, for example, that lots of Russian generals have been killed in this war. Now, all I would say is that the Russians have only confirmed the death of one general, and that was in Mariupol. They've provided no confirmation of the deaths of any of the others. And this is all information coming from one source, Ukraine, and, well, the Western intelligence operation that supports it. And, you know, I've seen this happen so many times in so many parts of the world, in Syria, in Iraq, in North Korea. People are supposed to be dead, and then they turn out to be living. So, you know, I pay little attention to these things.
All right. Any other things that we should know that's going on the ground, or is that covering most of it?
I think that covers most of it.
Or something.
Yeah, I mean, there's the major battle.
Any regions that we should focus on?
Again, again, I don't want to be the person who, I mean, I'm not, as I said, I'm not a military person. I don't want to get into the tactical details. There's been lots of fighting in Popaznaya, which is apparently a strategically key place. And there's also been a great deal of fighting in a place called Rubiznoye and near Liman. All of these places, you can find out all about that if you want to go to the right sites. But I mean, steady, incremental, but you know, Russian advances, but one step at a time. I think the important point to understand, and this is something that actually somebody pointed out to me just a few minutes before this video began, we started making this program, and it was based on a report, a video actually, done by no less an agency than the Financial Times, that some of these fortifications that Ukraine built, and I say Ukraine, I'm pretty sure it must have had a lot of advice and help from West, from the West to do it. Some of these fortifications that were built in Donbass are 20 miles deep. I mean, they are extremely sophisticated and big fortifications. So cracking them is going to take time. But eventually it will happen because of the sheer amount of firepower that has been directed to the troops there and the fact that the troops in these places are running out of ammunition. So, you know, inevitably, breaking through is going to take time. But with wars of attrition, and I remember this very, very well in Syria, for example, what tends to happen is you see this tremendous struggle, slight advance here, retreat there, but lots of people being dying, lots of people being hit, and suddenly the collapse comes. And when the collapse happens, it's sudden. And what you can also see is that the Russians are keeping large numbers of tank forces, armored forces, in reserve, not just in Donbass, but near Nikolaev. And I'm pretty sure that when the collapse comes, that's when we're going to see those armored forces activated. And then we're going to see those forces undertake the kind of rapid advances that people seem to be so anxious to see. By the way, the same thing happened in 2014. I remember when the Ukrainians and the Donbass militias fought their first war. It began in April. There was this enormous, you know, war of attrition. And suddenly the collapse came, the Ukrainian collapse came, at the end of July, early August.
All right, we will leave it there. Go to the Durand shop, everybody. Use the code GOODDAY, get 10% off, and go to theduran.locals.com. Take care.